Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together? How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Low and open, Stacks and Jacks. I'm somehow Ricardo on the board. S&P futures down 30. NASDAQ futures down 132. Dow futures down 175. That's not great if we're long today, which I think everybody pretty much is. So that's not the best. Do we have Carl?
You do.
How are you, bud?
What do you mean it's not the best? Come on, man. Look. What you think putting $400 and some billion on the national credit card over the last couple of weeks is it wouldn't be trying to buy an election outcome, would it?
Normally,
to be fair, every year there is some element of this game that goes on with the federal balance sheet. Okay, they do it every year. I don't care who's in office. Makes no difference. There's always... hell, it goes all the way back to when I used to run my internet company. We'd have people that would deliberately... September 30th was the day you weren't going to get paid on time. All right?
Well,
and then the 1st of October, you get the check, right? Happens all the time. However... the size of this one is...
All right, tell everybody what you're talking about.
Okay. So, we all know that the deficit is the difference between what you take in taxes and what you spend, right?
Right.
It's pretty basic. It's same thing in your personal life. You have a certain amount of money that you make, and then you have a certain amount of money that you spend. And if you spend more than you make, you have to finance it somehow. Which for most ordinary people means it goes on a credit card. For the government, it goes out in the bond market. So at the end of the fiscal year, if you want to make the deficit look smaller than it really is, what you do is you don't pay people until after the start of the new fiscal year. And so you basically stiff them for, not permanently, but for a couple of weeks. And every administration does this because it makes the deficit.
They didn't last year.
I don't know. I have to go look across that specific day. I mean, you could pull debt to the penny and just look at the September 30 versus October, first business day of October number, last business day of September.
Well, last year. There was a deficit of 170 in September. This year is a surplus of 64.
Sure there was, right? I mean, yeah.
Well, you do have a messed up month in a sense that you do have some people paying their tax stuff.
Well, that's right. And there is, so, because you have the quarterlies, right, that are due. But the government loves to do this where... they don't pay people the last 2 weeks of the month, and then in October they do.
Well, I suppose I don't want to dig through the study. I don't think you do either, as much as you like to study stuff. But now that you have me looking at this page, more questions come up than answers.
Always.
Last year in August, the outlays were 193 only, after being in the sixes and fives the whole year, which is sort of weird. So there was actually a big surplus in August last year. Surplus, more taken in than more pushed out. Now this year, that phenomenon is not there. This is what I don't get. How last year the government could have an outlay of 193 and this year it'd be $685. It's sort of bizarre. And then in September last year, their outlay was $638. This year it's $463. How the hell could you have that much difference in a 21 days working day month in the 2 years? Unless you paid for an aircraft carrier last year or something.
Oh yeah, I mean you go from 9:30. Okay, if you look at the total, the total debt outstanding, you go to the debt to the penny series, and on 9:30, it was 35 trillion 464 billion, and the next day, it's all of a sudden 200 billion higher, 35 668. Okay. And this pattern is one that has been seen repeatedly. It doesn't matter who's been president of the United States. I've seen this, this happens all the effing time.
But I'm saying it didn't last year. It was exactly the opposite. It was a big surplus in August and been a big downshot in September.
Yeah, but it's extremely unusual. Okay. I mean, this is, Well, you're 33,167 and 30. No, that's not true. 33,167 and 33,442. That's $300 billion.
I'm looking at the August and September summary number.
No, don't do that. There's game playing that goes on between the intergovernmental holdings and the debt held by the public.
Well, but just in general, last year, how do you go from in July, $496, which is 20, essentially.
Chief, I get that. I'm looking specifically at the last business day of September and the first business day of October. Okay, that is where the spike happens. It's reliable. It doesn't matter who's in office.
Here's a stupid question. I should know the answer to. Does government pay on the 1st and the 15th of every month? I mean, is it possibly there could be 3 payrolls in 1 month or something, or 2? No way. August is a long month, so. I mean, I'm just looking, according to this thing, which I think has to be BS, because, not BS, but I got $22 billion a day being spent in July. I got 10 in June, 10 in July. I'm sorry, 10 in August, and like 30 in September. That can't happen.
Well, there's all sorts of things that can happen, but I just look at this base level table because there's game playing that goes on in the intergovernmental area as well, which is the one pocket to the other transfers with Social Security and Medicare, primarily. Yep. I mean, there's other programs in there, but those are the big ones. And the way you ignore that is to look at the total public debt outstanding, and that way you're not, you're not cherry picking off one or the other, and you're also preventing them from claiming they didn't do it when they did do it. They just hit it.
Okay.
All right. So, but this is an extremely common practice. It happens all the time, and it's one of those things that you look at, and you go, what the blank? Well, obviously the answer is we want the national deficit number and therefore the run rate for the current fiscal year. If we can manage to make that look a 100 billion or 200 billion smaller than it really is, we're going to play that game and do that. All right, and every administration does this, but it's especially obscene this year just because of the size.
Well, the numbers are huge, but it's funny. I was you try and put some kind of truth in some of this. And obviously, we have a very contested election two weeks from today. Got to hope it's over 2 weeks from tomorrow, but one way or the other. But I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't either.
But it's funny. I've had a few Trumpers, and if you don't like Harris, you don't like where the Democrats are going. I surely understand. So I'm not gonna get a whole long story about why you're voting for who the hell you're voting for. But please do me a favor. Don't vote for Trump because you think it's Biden's inflation, for God's sake. That is that's a stone cold lie. I mean,
here's the thing that I've been, I've been yelling about forever, all right, which is that by the Constitution, every single penny that gets spent has to be appropriated in the House. So I don't care what the president wants to do without the House of Representatives passing a bill that allows it. He can't, because they all cost money. All those things cost money.
Well, they can monkey around with. Well, they can do something through these stupid executive orders. But here's what I'm talking about. This is COVID, and there was reasons. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah, but the spending chief all comes out of Congress.
Okay, but how you cover the spending is somewhat of a just from February 2020, the month before COVID, money supply was 15.4. At the tippy top when tippy top was a month after he left office. January 2022, when the hell did Biden get in? It went up a little bit his first year.
Well, it was 21. Yeah, right. It was January 21.
It went up a little bit
right.
His first year, and now it's actually down from when he. Maybe not. Where are we?
No, I don't think it is.
No, it's up a little bit. But most of it was up under Trump. It's up just a little bit under Biden. It started to went up, then it kept coming down, and now it's going back up again. So I'm not absolutely not a fan of what Biden has done to the money supply. But to say that it's. The lion's share of the bulge was in when Trump was in office. The remaining part came when it's not. Carl, you understand this, but it is so difficult because it's a complicated subject. It's not how much you spend; it's how you finance it, how you pay for it.
Right.
If every time the Congress were to say, "We're going to spend $1 trillion today." Which they have a few times.
I was going to say, this is new.
This is not an exaggeration. I mean, 10 years ago, that would have been an amazing exaggeration. If they're going to spend $1 trillion today and they say, oh, by the way, we're going to have a surplus on income taxes for exactly $1 trillion.
Right.
There's nothing inflationary in that at all. Right. Except some people are going to get it and some people are going to give it. Or if they say, we're going to go out and borrow it, basically suck it out of the now that's kind of a two-part one though too, Carl, because if you totally suck it out of the when I say suck it out of have American citizens buy those bonds, again you're back to break even. Now if you sell them overseas, that's a tough one, right? But if you just plain print it, now that's inflationary, right?
Right.
But where do you come down on the overseas versus domestic?
So there's a problem with doing that sort of thing, in that it ties back to trade balance. All right, and one of the hide the sausage games that our government has played over the years is essentially neutering the immediate inflationary impact by having that debt sold overseas. Which, if you think about the impact of this, the only reason that somebody would do that is that, number one, they think that we're a safe haven and our currency is more stable than theirs. Or the second is they want influence over our political process and in our government.
Well, the Saudis sure gained it when they started.
The second one is especially evil. Okay. The first one is, nearest to the benefit of the politicians who love to make claims. But by the way, offshoring supply chains screws the American consumer, not immediately, but it does with certainty, because you take that supply chain out of America, you take the jobs out of America at the same time. And the common claim that we always hear from people And Chief, you've said it too. You know, hey, the guy that mows the grass at the golf course, he did. There's no American that would do that job. Well, you know what? Tyson Chicken tried that garbage, and in a number of years ago, they had some of their chicken plants that got raided by ICE back before Biden was in office. When they actually raided places that were using illegal labor, and funny thing happened, they stuck a big sign out in front of the plant said, by the way, we don't seem to have any workers. We need people. Yeah, they had to pay another buck and a half an hour. But guess what? A whole bunch of Americans showed up, took the jobs.
I think when some of those, I'm going way back now. I think some of those golf courses, They live there.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, Hello Caddyshack. Okay. Well,
what was the name of the place? It became Michael George. There's a big restaurant in LaSalle. I think it was Ireland's Steakhouse. And then it became Michael Jordan's. Now it's been like three or four names since then. I could remember walking by there. I used to walk home and I looked closer. Everybody looked like they were living upstairs.
Well, and they might have been.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, the reason why I asked you this question.
But here's the problem with what we've got going on right now, okay? And the impact of this is baked in the cake. You look at the backup that's happening in the bond market at the moment. And what this means for people trying to finance things like, for example, buying a house. The Fed has allegedly cut rates, which, you know, as I have said before, no, they haven't. All they do is follow what the 13-week bill does. And oh, by the way, the 13-week bill is still trading 50 basis points below where the Fed is. All right, so the market is screaming more, 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 more.
But the 10-year's going up a tenth of a point a day for like the last 3 days.
Well, that's right. But the 10-year is now trading at 4.182. And by the way, that inversion that has been going on for 2 years is getting rather close to not being inverted anymore. It's -3.36 right now, and it was at -18.4 a year and a half ago. So we are on the cusp of this breaking out. If you look at this chart pattern, you could say, well, it's up against overhead resistance. And you know, historia over the last couple of years, when it's done this, it has turned around and fallen back the other direction. Okay. Maybe it will this time, which, by the way, would, you know, I mean, that, boy, it's been the longest in history. This would, this would just extend that cycle. On the other hand, if it breaks out the other direction, then all hell's about to break loose in the finance markets, and that's
what you have to worry about. That's
well, and you know what? Here it is. Because at some point you have to pay the check with this kind of stuff, right? I mean, I can run my credit card right up until the point it comes back declined, right?
Well, I mean, you and I have talked about it since as long as you've been there. But before we go any further, I got to ask you the question I started to ask you. In class one day, when people started bitching about deficits in like 1975 or 6, whatever year it was, somebody asked Uncle Milty Friedman the question, are you concerned about the federal deficit? And what do you think the answer was?
Oh, he probably said no.
He said not at all.
Right.
Because, I mean, this is what's changed. So I want to ask Uncle Carl here, or not Uncle Milty. His response was, and I'm going to say in those days, I don't know if he knew about the deal they cut the Saudis at the time or whatever, but he said, essentially, you have your citizenry, the government owning the citizens. He said, it's like if you go buy some house and hear two people fighting, and the old man owns the old lady, you know, $500. He goes, the house is flat. You don't care.
Well, that's one of the things about the interest, you know, expense too,
yeah,
is that people have been screaming about that. But the fact is that, you know, $200 billion of that is taking a 20 out of one pocket, putting it in the other.
Well, and you're paying taxes on it.
Well, no, you're not at that level. You're not. No, I'm talking about. $200 billion of it is actually intergovernmental transfers. It's interest payments that are due from Social Security, you know, to Social Security from the government. But the money that the government pays out in Social Security is still part of the government. So that $20 bill comes out of one pocket, goes in the other, but it's in the same body.
All right, you're escaping the question. My question now is, if I had to raise my hand and said, Uncle Milty, let's fast forward 40-some years, and half of the, well, 40-some percent of the money that the government owes is to people overseas. How different would you think the answer would be?
Oh, the answer is hugely different.
I'm asking this because I don't know. I know it would be different. I don't know how much.
Chief, the answer is very significantly different, and the reason is that interest payments that go outside the country are not a net zero. They're a net drain on the finances of the nation.
Yeah, you don't get paid taxes back on those.
Well, you don't get. Not only do you not get any taxes back on them, but the money isn't spent in the United States.
Right.
Okay, now, when I, you know, if I hold treasury bills and, you know, I'm getting 5% on my money, roughly, all right, and, you know, and I have $1 million, all right, well, I'm getting 5% of $1 million, all right, so, it's, you know, there's 50 grand, right? And that is cash that I can spend, and when I pay my power bill, or I pay my property taxes, or I buy my food.
It keeps you on the top shelf of the scotch aisle.
Well, but yeah, exactly. The point being, I spent the money with the U.S. distillery or the U.S. food store.
Right.
Right? And so it gets recycled back into the economy, and it goes back up the supply chain and pays people's salaries and pays for the things we produce. Uncle Milty... he's right, but he's wrong.
He's wrong now, sure.
He's wrong now because it went overseas. But the thing is that where Uncle Milty was always wrong, and where everyone's always wrong when it comes to accumulating debt and deficits, is that these guys all disbelieve physics. The laws of thermodynamics are not suggestions, and they apply to economics. There is no such thing as a transaction that doesn't have loss. I don't care whether you are converting coal into electricity or whether you're converting funds from one hand to another. We all know this, Chief. The most efficient loan from a standpoint of any lending transaction is you have capital and you lend me the money. The money has one hand... one set of hands that it goes between, okay? Every single person that touches that transaction wants a vig out of it. Nobody works for free.
They got to wet their beak.
Well, nobody works for free, Chief, okay?
Sometimes I feel like I am, but...
Well, but you know what I'm saying, right? All right, so, I mean, you know, these people came up with this idea that by slicing and dicing and having their, you know, having their securitized finance and all this, it made the market more efficient. It did divide up the risk into tranches and essentially bifurcate risk where it was homogeneous and allow you to, you know, to categorize risk based upon what the borrower preferred. And, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of arguments like this. But at the end of the day, it always costs more.
I think of the examples those guys were using was stuff like, what they call the bonds in World War II, where people bought bonds and at the end of the war they paid them off.
Oh, the war bonds.
Yeah, war bonds. I think that was kind of the example. That's so far away from the example today. What was the deal? This has kind of nothing to do with the conversation, maybe a little bit. What was the deal? Was it Bush 1 made with the Saudis when they upped the price of oil and they said, okay, we're not going to be really too hard on you for that as long as you take the money and buy U.S. treasuries with it? Oh, by the way, we won't let anybody know you're buying them or something. It'll keep it off balance sheet. What was that deal?
You know, there's exactly how that all worked is not, it's not entirely clear, all right? But there were all kinds of, you know, there's all kinds of hinky stuff that goes on when you start talking about the Saudis and international influence and things like this.
They were real tight with the Bushies.
Oh, yeah, and but do realize that nobody ever, there's no such thing as a free transaction. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And you know, the laws of thermodynamics are not suggestions, and they say that, you know, not only can you not win, that you also can't break even. And so if you think you can add complexity to a system and not pay for it, you're out of your mind.
So you're saying you want to be a prime dealer?
Well, you know, because that gets me the vig, right?
What do you suppose the difference is?
By the way, you do realize that the bargain that you have to make in order to be a prime dealer is that you will bid. Okay, I mean, that's the bargain.
Yeah.
The problem is there is no agreement on at what price.
So now even we went to the auction yesterday, but it's still, we're buying it even though we go through RBC. RBC is the second person in the transaction. It's bought originally by like Goldman or somebody, and they get a little vig before it gets to RBC and us.
Right.
And then when they out and buy them, when the Fed says they're going out and buying stuff in the open market, they're paying somebody commission for that.
Well, yeah, but the point being,
plus you get the front run.
Well, yeah. But the point is that just because somebody says, well, you know, they say that they'll, you know, they agree they're going to show up at the auction. Well, yeah, they did. But they didn't say what they were going to bid at the auction, did they?
Right. Well, yeah. I never understood the part about how much they'll say, like 70% went for the high price. Somebody get a lower price? It's not one price auction.
Essentially, I mean, if you think about how it works, it's like, well, I got this pile of candy that that I have to have in order to hand out to the kids in Halloween, right? And I need to have 50 pounds of candy. Well, the first 10 pounds of it is, you know, some stuff that some guy had laying around he doesn't really want, and I get a really nice price on that stuff.
Yeah.
But then, the rest, maybe not so much, right? So, the thing is that during this bidding process, so you have this percentage that was allocated at the high, basically, is what it comes down to. And that's also why you get this phenomenon with tails, where auctions do sometimes generate tails, which is bad from the standpoint of, you know, demand, what it says about demand. The other thing that's interesting, though, about that is that people say, well, you know, there'll be a failed auction when the market gets tired of this BS out of Treasury. No, there won't, because Treasury can pull the auction up until the point that it closes and locks. So they could say, well, we don't like that number. We're just not going to do it. The problem, of course, with doing that is then they don't have any cash. The cash that they thought they were going to raise isn't there.
Well, that would be a huge problem.
If they pull an auction, look out below in terms of the rest of the markets.
Yeah, we have... stupid question. If people go to the Treasury direct, is there a prime dealer between them and the government on that one?
No, but that's a non-competitive.
It's just for a little bit. You're just getting a regular price.
Yeah, but it's non-competitive. You're not part of the bidding.
Okay.
You get whatever the price is, but it is a non-competitive process. But you are piggybacking on the competitive bids that the primary dealers are submitting.
Well, you know, just kind of summarize on the 30 and 10. The thing that's weird about that is for some reason now, the Fed is, you know, increasing the money supply a little bit, which means they're pushing some inflation out there again. But they're also letting their balance sheet drop down, so they're not essentially punishing you and I for actually saying, wow, these rates are going to go up, we're going to sell bonds. They're not out driving them where the sun don't shine on us like they did for 5 years. So they're doing a very unusual thing here, in that they're kind of letting these long-term rates go up. And it's, you know, the thing
Well, they don't have as much control over the long end as they do on the short.
Well, they did when they were buying $1 trillion a month.
Well, yeah, but that stuck distortions into the market that I don't think you're going to see happen again.
I would hope not. But here's what I'm saying. And I, you know, I'm in wine and rag and river, kind of stupid term you want to use, about these long-term rates now for what, 5-6 years at least? And the thing that's always, you know, I think you and I have, even though we disagree on just about everything and a lot of stuff, we have a certain amount of common sense, in the sense that if somebody gave me their money to manage, I mean, if I got Carl's dad's money, I don't think your dad's still around, but if he was, if I got his dough and he sent me $1 million, and the first thing I did was charge him a fee for the next 10 years to put it in a 1.5% 10-year bond.
Yeah.
I think it is such a stupid thing to do with anybody's money that you sit there and go, who the hell's doing it? You know, and then you drop down into the, okay, well, state, local governments have to invest in federal stuff, and in the near term is paying nothing. So maybe they're dumb enough to say, just to get my 1.5%, I'll go out to the 10-year. But I'm sure some people did that. And then you've got insurance companies doing the same thing, and you've got banks doing the same thing, evidently, if you look what happened to Silicon Valley. Now, I don't think that the world can continue to drive on a transaction that's actually lousy. I mean, right? I mean, it's a bad transaction. So you sit there and go, how can this go on forever? That's my common sense on the thing, and I think it was yours too. It's not like it's 5.5%, you know. And if I did it for Carl's dad for some of his money, he'd say, "God, you're an idiot." You know, if you'd have waited 6 months, it might have been 5.7. I mean, no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a number where you're locking in at the end of 10 years, you got way more wealth than you started with, which is just a horrendous transaction. Yet a lot of people did it because we got a dash here, Carl.
Yep,
Joelstrom. But maybe Fred, let's talk a little bit about what is the mark-to-market and all that stuff in these banks and insurance companies.
Well,
there's gotta be some horrible balance sheets out there.
There is a serious problem in unrealized losses. Yes,
God, I can't even want to imagine. Maybe you can. What do you suppose the European Central Bank's balance sheet looks like?
Oh,
they're
my God,
stuff negative.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, S&P futures down 24 and Nasdaq futures down 96. Carl will talk Friday, if not sooner. I think Kenny will be on today, but I know you always hang around just in case. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Ricky, we're going to go real quick. SP Futures down 24, Nasdaq Futures down 97. We want to give Ryan here some time. We have Ryan Filona substituting for Joel and Con today, maybe trying to take his spot. I don't know. We'll find out in a second. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Chief?
Doing good. How does it feel to be Joel's guy?
I'll tell you what. I'm pretty honored. He's a big Michigan fan. I'm a Chicago guy, though. But Joel's been a mentor, a stock mentor of mine since I met him. So honored.
He's. Hey, maybe you can answer the question. When's the last time Illinois beat Michigan?
Oh God. I'd have to look that up.
It feels like a long time.
Feels like a long time.
What did everybody? I know you're not Joel, but did a lot of people just hit the portal when Harbaugh left, or what? It seems like
yeah. I mean, I think Harbaugh. Well, I mean, you know, the other thing is that McCarthy left, right? So he was obviously, you watch the games now and you see that they're missing him, right? Or the Tuttle orgy, they can't really do the same thing. They lost a couple of really good linemen too. Blake Corum was literally the centerpiece of that offense. So it's sad to see, but at least they got that natty before they kind of went onto the backside.
Yeah, you know, with 2 weeks to go to the election. Well, let's hope it's 2 weeks and a day before we have a winner, but I don't know about I don't know what my bet would be on that. What do you think? Are we going to have days like yesterday and the day before? We're just going to maybe open down, come back, almost unchanged in the close, do nothing? Or is that what do you think? Is there going to be a direction? I don't see any polls or anything giving anybody a definitive idea of who's winning here. Do you?
No, that's a great question. Honestly, to me, it feels like every day it feels like the market is kind of being held up. And you might ask yourself, well, what's it being held up for? And to me, it sure seems like they're just kind of waiting to get this election out of the way. I expect to see low volume. We've been seeing low volume pretty much all summer. I really expect that. We got an earnings season coming up here, so we'll see. I know Tesla reports tomorrow, so we'll see if we get some increased volume across the market. But my gut tells me, no, this is going to be pretty low volume until the election. Let's get some more clarity once the event is out of the way, and then we'll go from there. The polls, I don't know who you follow, but the polls kind of swing back and forth. It makes it look like it's a dead heat, and there are a lot of people saying, well, there's oversampling on one side, so it's actually not a dead heat. I'm not even going to participate in that. I'll wait and see, and then I'll trade whatever the result is.
I don't think, when I see the polls today, and I haven't done any of this studying on this stuff since I was in college a long time ago, I don't see how the hell you poll people today when nobody has landlines, nobody has... I don't know how you can possibly. I've read polls that 1,000 people nationwide. Who the hell are 1,000 people? How do you get a random sample of the nation, for God's sake? And how do you find 1,000 people?
I ask myself that all the time. I don't know how they find these people. I've never been one of these people. I don't know anybody that's like, yeah, you know, I filled out poll information here today. So I don't know who these people are. That's one of the reasons why I just kind of ignore the whole thing.
I get stuff on my phone all the time. But there has to be a difference between the people who will fill it out and the people who won't.
Yeah, no question.
You know, it's like you can't, time for that. You know, you can't just go down Michigan Avenue and poll people there because there's a difference between the people on Michigan Avenue and the people that aren't, right?
Absolutely. There's a difference on Michigan Avenue, difference in the suburbs. I mean, the state is huge. Yeah, I don't know where they get those people.
When you say, it's a question for, I mean, I've never met you, but I suspect you're a little younger than Joel and me. When you see, I've been kind of digging through like a phenomenon because I was around in 2000. I mean, when you first started to get kind of the influx of 401ks, wasn't the first time, but I mean, it's kind of when all that stuff started sort of in the 90s. 401ks and people just they never were really in the market before, just every week putting $100 in the market or $200 in the market or whatever, to the point where you got, in retrospect, massive prices on stocks like Cisco and things that you never should have got. I mean, if you look at the stock afterward, you say, well, how the hell did this thing ever trade 60 when it's trading 6? But it was a kind of a relentless where 5 or 6 stocks, I think I can name them, but I don't have to, were, again, 48% of the QQQ. We're sort of right back into that. When you say the market, is there, it's being held up, is it being held up by somebody like the Fed, or is it being held up in the sense that there just is no volume, but every day somebody's 401k check lands somewhere on somebody's mutual fund desk or ETF desk and they got to buy, to where your NVIDIA is going to go up and nothing happens, the stock's going to be 200 2 years from now, even if the stock's worth nothing, which I don't think it is worth nothing, but how much of it is just momentum by just there's those people? You don't see people selling their 401ks every week. Matter of fact, they don't sell at all, most of them. Is it partly the structure of the market, or is the Fed buying spoos or something? I wouldn't put it past them, but what do you think is causing this? Every day that it's slow, we just get this little run up on the close every day. It's like mutual fund buying from the 80s, for God's sake.
Yeah, what I think it is I think it's a combination of two things, and I don't necessarily want to put this on the Fed. I want to put this on funds and then overnight buyers, because it sure seems like every single overnight session, the market is up. Now, we're down a little bit here in the S&P futures here this morning, but let's see if the buy the dippers come in here again, because you're right, this market just will not sell off. And as far as the inflows that you're talking about, the 401k and all that, there is, even as recently as this summer, you could literally see this. The first of the month or the first trading day of the month, you would see the market just trade up because people are adding, are buying stocks for their portfolio. You could literally track that every month. Now, that seems to have slowed down here, but you talked also about the concentration. I can't remember a time. I'm 40, so I am younger than you guys, but I've been following this since I was a little kid. And I have never seen concentration like this in my life. And
go back to 2000. Look at Cisco, Oracle, Intel, Microsoft. What the hell's the other one? Might have been Dell. Same ratio as the big six they have now.
Sounds familiar, though, right?
Yeah.
Sounds familiar. NVIDIA, Apple, Microsoft, some of this Google, some of the same names in there.
Yep.
That has me worried.
Actually, the only same name is Microsoft.
Some of the same type of dynamic going on with some of these tech stocks.
Which should make you nervous that there's only one left, actually.
To me, I think that there's going to be a kind of an exodus from some of these stocks, right? And I think that when you start bringing the whole thing that's going on right now is this infatuation with AI. And all of the names that we just talked about have some type of AI angle. I think as you start to release more, there starts to be some more IPOs for some of these AI stocks. You're actually going to see some of these stalwarts, if you will, sell off. And you're going to have funds move into some of those other stocks. Personally, I think this would be a great thing because I think we should diversify a little bit more. I was just reading an article the other day, 100-year concentration high in some of these names, and I think that's going to end badly. And to your point about the election, maybe that happens right after the election. Maybe they save it for early 2025. I can't tell you when, but looking at these charts, there's going to be a big down move.
Well, how come everybody, this is maybe a couple of months ago, somebody was saying that, you know, depending on which side you're on, especially the Republicans probably are guilty of this a little more than the Democrats, but the market loves the Republicans, which, in fact, over 100 and some years in the market is total BS. They're pretty much dead even, except the Democrats might be a little more advanced, but not enough to make any difference. And yet, I read some report where 992 days into each guy's presidency, the market was up like the exact same amount. It's like, you know, the last two presidencies. So it is amazing. It's like the big lie that, you know, that the market loves Republicans. And no, it doesn't. I mean, if you look at the history of it, I mean, it doesn't, probably loves Republicans and it loves Democrats. There's only been, here, I'll hit you with this one. You didn't deserve this. There's only been three presidents that had the market down during one of their terms. Can you name them? Still be a gimme. Was what's his name? Hoover. Was down during Hoover's last term, was also down during Roosevelt's first term, and was actually down during George Bush's term, one of his terms. So there haven't been very many. Matter of fact, so pretty much the market's up like everybody's presidency except for three guys.
Well, so here's what so you were just talking about, the market doesn't really care if it's Democrat or Republican. That's true. You know what the market cares about? Certainty. If the market knows what's going to happen, the market will go up. If there's a lot of uncertainty introduced into the system, kind of like what you're talking about right now with not really knowing who's going to be the next president, then maybe that can kind of lead to some market uncertainty. But the market really prefers certainty. It doesn't really care if there's a Democrat or a Republican in there. If it's going to be status quo, the market's going to be good with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really good politics for the market to go flying down during anybody's White House tour, is it? I mean, it sort of isn't. Hey, thank you very much. You're back on next week? Joel's out for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, he hasn't mentioned that, but I'm available anytime.
Yeah, it was great, buddy. Next week, we'll be closer. Maybe we'll have a prediction. Who knows? S&P futures down 27, NASDAQ futures down 109. Ricky, you want to go right to Kenny?
Yeah.
Kenny, you there, bud?
Yep. I'm here.
So what'd you make of all that? Ryan made some good points there. What'd you make of all that?
He did. I think he's absolutely right, right? It is. The market wants clarity. That's all it wants. Good or bad clarity, it just wants clarity because it can adjust whether the news is good or bad. What it doesn't like and where we see the kind of volatility is when there is lack of clarity. And I think right now there is some lack of clarity around the election. I think the polls, though, in the betting markets are certainly starting to say that it's probably a Trump win, not a sweep, but just a Trump win in the White House and maybe a Republican win in the Senate with the Democrats controlling the House, which, by the way, is the best result. You want to split Congress no matter who's in the White House. You want it to be a split Congress because then it controls more of the narrative. It forces the moderates to come to the middle, and then the fringes on both the left and the right get pushed away.
I've actually not been reading that much about the Congress. They expect both houses to flip, basically.
Right, exactly. Both houses will flip is what they think is going to happen.
Well, how many Democrats got to win in the House for that to flip?
I don't know, because I don't know how. I don't really follow the House races that much. The Senate race more so than the House races, but I'm not sure how many seats are up for sale at this election.
Well, the Democrats in the Senate weren't a lot more Democrats. Yes, out for
there were more Democratic seats that were up. That's why they're expecting the Senate to flip to Republicans, because there are a lot of good challengers out there. And so the betting market, you know, what's very interesting is that the polls, if you listen to what the mainstream media tells you, the polls are neck and neck, and, you know, she's ahead here and she's ahead there and he's ahead there and he's ahead there, and everything is neck and neck. But if you look at the betting markets that people are actually placing money on the outcome has him way out in the lead. So it's going to be very interesting to see which one of these quote-unquote polls is correct. Are the betting markets, do they have their finger on the pulse, or are really the polls that the mainstream media pushes, do they have their finger on the pulse? That's going to be an interesting result, I think, next Tuesday or 2 weeks.
I read some stuff, Kenny, in this I know people send me stuff, as you all know, and send you stuff, I'm sure, too, but I would find it, certainly I'm going to say it would surprise me if Trump won. I'd be pretty surprised, really, because of the change in the demographic. And the more I read articles that trace that, the more I think he's got a rough sled here.
Well, you know, I will say that is true. Certainly with what they've done to try to change the complexion of, you know, the voter base, I think that is true. But I also think that, you know, when it comes right down to it, people are going to vote with their pocketbooks, going to realize how difficult it's been over the last 4 years. You know, and four more years of Kamala Harris is you're not flipping the page. You're not moving forward. You're getting a lot of the same that we've had. So that tagline, you know, time to turn the page. Yeah, you're not turning the page with Kamala Harris.
Well,
and by the way, Trump was president for 4 years already. It's not like he's an unknown. We know what he did. You may not like his personality. You may not like, you know, some of his style. But you know how the country performed and how we were viewed in the world.
How can anybody say we performed well when the whole thing of the last 2.5 years was COVID?
Well, exactly right. Under the circumstance, you mean the last 2.5 years of his?
Yeah.
His
well, in the first year.
Year of the other one. No, I hear you. That completely disrupts it. That completely disrupts it. But you know, the Democrats will say, as if he caused COVID, as if he brought it on, as if he was the one to cause that disaster. We all know he wasn't. So stop on him.
You do know, I'm not going to say that, plus I don't want to argue politics with you, you do know that Obama had an executive order that prohibited us funding the GAIN technology that was going on in Wuhan?
GAIN of function research that what's-his-name, Fauci, was very much a part of.
But on his first day, in his zeal to reverse every executive order of Obama's, he reversed that executive order.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's a new piece of news. I didn't know that he reversed that executive. Well, I thought that was just in place. I thought that had been in place and was in place.
No, I think it was somehow reversed. But, you know, but the demographics, I was reading some stuff. And again, I'm not a pollster, but I'm getting the same sort of feeling I did with the Brexit. That they were, one guy last week was talking about there's been 376,000 new signups in the last 6 months or 8 months or something, which is, and they said traditionally anybody who signs up within 6 or 9 months of a presidential election, like 85% of them vote, because that's why they signed up.
Yeah,
and they're talking about the generation something something, and how a lot of Trump's voters, and this is not, I'm in the middle here. I don't think I'm going to vote for either one, but that a lot of his voters are, to be perfectly blunt, dead. With the COVID and everything else, and a lot of the younger people, especially the young women, can't stand the guy, and nobody's polling them. How the hell do you poll a 19-year-old girl who just signed up?
Yeah, you may not, and maybe a 19-year-old girl's not interested in even responding to the poll. You're right. That's why I wonder if the polls are really accurate, right? I don't know, because to your point, are they polling everyone? Are they getting a realistic result? I don't know. All I know is that the betting markets, though, have a very different result.
Well, the betting markets were stone cold wrong on the Brexit.
I don't remember that. Were they?
Yeah. And yet, the only show, and you were on, that called them leaving was Stacks and Jacks. Because our buddy Robert, was over in London for a Fed conference. He said in London, everybody was convinced his vote was a joke. But he took the train down to, where's the harbor where... We're doing, what's his name's Nelson's boat is down. Anyway, down there to see Nelson's, whatever his boat that he won the damn war or whatever. Anyway, all their antique naval vessels. He said everybody on the train couldn't wait to be out of Europe. He goes, the difference in mentality between London and the rest of the country was just not picked up by any of the pollers or the gamblers. He goes, first thing he did when he got back, he calls me. He goes, they're out of there. He goes, the difference is dramatic, and who's saying what and where. So I don't know. I mean,
it's going to be, look, until it's over, it's not over, right?
Right.
We still got 14 days, whatever, 15 days, 2 weeks, whatever the number is. But the truth is, I hope when we wake up on the morning of November 6th, it's done. I don't really care.
I'll take the under on that, but I'm with you. Well, I hope to.
I hear you, because all the swing states have already said it's going to take them 3 or 4 days to count all their ballots. So they've already said that. They're trying to prepare the markets for, well, you know, we're going to drag this out because we're not answering right away. which I think, by the way, I think that's baloney that they're not getting their ballots counted on election day. But you see, that just fuels the conspiracy theory right away. If they take 3 or 4 days to count their ballots, everyone's saying, okay, here you go.
Kenny, they're all gonna bitch about it, but nobody's gonna say, you know what, guys, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna have the polls open on Saturday and Sunday. You gotta show up.
Right.
Unless you're in the army overseas or have a real excuse. And by the way, we wanna see the whites of your eyes and you gotta be here. There's 2 days there. You should be able to find a way to get there. I mean, if you're Jewish, you can't go on Saturday. If you're Catholic, maybe you don't want to go on Sunday. Whatever. Pick one. I mean, because I do think that when you talk about, from what I understand, Kenny, and the last thing I want to do is go into how this vote stuff is done, but when people send in a mail-in ballot, you know, from what I understand, you sign the envelope.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to be able to trace you to your vote, because nobody wants that, right?
Right.
So what they do is, when they pull the ballot out, they check the signature, they separate the two. Whether they actually throw the envelope out, I don't know. But there's really no way to do a recount, which is screwed up.
Right.
You know what? I think actually might happen, Kenny, is kind of my worst fear, is he wins the Electoral College and he gets decimated popular vote-wise. And I think there's going to be a big hue and cry about what the hell are we doing.
Well, I understand that he can win one and lose the other, because that's happened a number of times, right? I get that. But can he lose it by – can he still win the Electoral College and still lose the popular vote by that much?
By absolutely.
Really?
Sure.
How can he do that? Because if the popular vote is against him, you got to win – you got to win a certain percentage in order to win the electoral votes in that state.
She could get 65% in Illinois or California. That's more than all the other states in the West combined. The 15% in California is more than North Dakota, South Dakota, all those redneck states.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're about to find out.
Yeah.
I honestly can't wait till it's over.
I'm concerned about, I don't know, I think if a real zero look at the guy, to me, almost looks like he's degrading as much as Biden was a year ago.
Do you think? I don't see it at all.
Well, some of the stuff that he's saying at places is like, God, he didn't really say that, did he? I mean, he's always been sort of like that, but it seems like it's...
By the way, I missed the whole Arnold Palmer comment. I'm not even sure I want to find out what he said. I missed that whole thing, though. All I'm getting
is... He said he had a huge schlong.
I understand that, but why did that even come up?
Because he was talking gibberish in his hometown.
And as soon as he started talking about
Arnold Palmer's hometown, all he did was say all the ladies loved him, and he had a big whatever. Out of the blue.
Okay, I saw it all over Twitter. I heard the comments, and I'm saying, what the hell is this about? Why would anybody talk about anybody's thing in a presidential election?
That's what I'm saying. I wonder if something's coming unglued. I mean, anybody who kind of knows people in sports knows that Arnold Palmer was quite the ladies' man.
Right.
He was considered, I think, they used to do the sexiest man. Don't they do the sexiest man of the decade or the year or something? He was the sexiest man of the decade. Not a movie star, which like never happens.
Right.
So what? what are you going to say? Wherever Wilt Chamberlain, you going to go to Harlem and talk about Wilt was big everywhere? I mean, what purpose does that serve?
I just don't understand why we're even talking about
it. It's the craziest thing you ever heard. But
here you and I have spent 10 minutes talking about Arnold Palmer Schlong. Yeah, I mean, why?
Because it's so ridiculous for anybody to say, even us, and he's the president. You're going to be the president, for God's sake.
I hear you.
Unbelievable. Hear you. So between now and a week from Tuesday, how do we trade this? We're going to be down every morning, creep up by the close, and close like almost unchanged?
Yeah, I think... You know, I actually think that the market is starting to pull back. You know, I've been calling for it for a while, and it's kind of avoided us in September and October. I now think that the market is getting used to the idea that maybe the Fed was a little bit too aggressive in September. 50 basis points was probably not the right move. Now the economy remains robust. The labor market has remained strong. And now the Fed's backed into a corner, because now the bets are that we get no rate cut in November, not even 25. Now we're getting this talk of no rate cut in September, in November, which I think is causing the markets just to be a little bit anxious. I don't think it's a signal for a complete meltdown. But I just once again think that that they've sent a confusing message. I think it was wrong in September when he played on the weakening labor market and he had to be aggressive about it. I think he should have done 25 then and it would have been fine, and 25 now. But now he did 50. He created this narrative. The narrative's not playing out. And so now he's got to say, okay, I'm not doing anything. And then I think the market's getting frustrated. That's all. And I just think the prices will adjust, and they will. And if they adjust lower, I actually think that's good, because I'd love to put more money to work, and I can't keep putting money to work if they keep chasing them higher.
Well, does the 0.1% interest rate long-term going up every day cause you trouble? It causes me trouble.
Well, it does, and I said it, you know, yesterday, but the 10-year blasted up through resistance at 4.17, and last week, when it was kissing 4%, I said, watch this, guy. Here's resistance. Here's where it's going to go, and once it goes there, it's going to go to 4.3 relatively swiftly. I think this morning is at 4.22, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I got I don't have it open yet, but I've got the bonds are down, so yeah, it's got to be up some.
Yeah, I think it was. I think this morning when I was writing my note, they were 4.21, and I think they ticked up higher then. So now the question is, where's really the tipping point? Is it still 5%? Is it 4.5%? That the market's going to have to take a breathe here and say, okay, hold on, guys, let's just readjust.
Well, if at 5% or over that, the deficit problems are even worse. I mean, for God's sake.
Certainly, because you saw what happened in October 2023 when it hit 5%. The market, the NASDAQ, the S&P, individual sector groups, you know, got hit. And I get it. But I think the market is look, they both promised to spend more money. So it's not a Republican or Democrat. They're both going to spend more money. And I think what the bond market is telling you is that it's afraid that it's going to ignite inflation again, which is what you and I have been talking about. You know, kind of an instant replay of what happened in 1978, 79, when they prematurely cut rates and then inflation took off again. And Paul Volcker had to slam the brakes on and drive the economy into a 2-year recession, which, by the way, actually brought prices down, right? Until you have a recession, the price of chicken and milk and eggs is not going down. It'll stay at the levels it's at.
Well, you and I are the reason why George Stigler said when he did, politics is a business, we just don't understand the business.
Yeah.
You and I are sitting there going, okay, wait a minute. You got this huge deficit, and these interest rates go up. You're kind of skunked, and yet we have one guy running around saying, oh, I like you guys. I like the booze you get. Well, he doesn't drink. I like whatever you gave me to drink for this seminar. Guess what? What are you guys again? Waitresses? Oh, you don't have to pay taxes. The next one, somebody else. He's going around like an absolute moron. And she's doing the same thing. Hey, you can't afford a house? Well, we'll give you 50 grand. Don't either one of them look at the numbers? I mean, for God's sake.
Listen, I hear you. I hear you.
But if you and I were running for office, that's what we'd be doing. Right?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. SP Futures, Kenny, talk to you next week. Feel good. SP Futures down 25, NASDAQ Futures down 100. A real quick break, and we'll be back with Professor Helsner.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye.
The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air. Money.
One more face, Facts and Jacks. I'm Hob Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 24, NASDAQ Futures down 97. Just kind of for instance here, we have the individual stocks, not that much. We had 3M had earnings. They are up $7 now. They were up $4. And we had Verizon had earnings, and they are down $1. So not much going on there. So not much. We have in the oil market, we have... I don't think the oil's doing much here, but it's up 70 cents, 71.28, and we have gold up again today a little bit. We have gold is up, the machine's a little slow here. I think gold's up like $10. So we have Professor Hal?
I'm here.
Gold's up 680, not $10. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Doing well.
Are you...
Devising season.
You're what?
It's student advising season.
Advising. What are you advising them to do? Be students?
Well, we got to make sure they graduate on time, right?
Graduation.
Which means
was last
we have to
June.
Go through their transcript and their curriculum guides and help them plan out their schedule.
Can't you say you got to take this many courses of this kind or the other and have people do this themselves?
You know, when I was an undergrad, I don't think I ever spoke to a professor or an advisor. I just knew what I needed to do, and I did it. So.
I spoke to a guy, actually, when I was home on Easter break, of all things. I was playing basketball and tore ligaments in my ankle. So I actually had 2 weeks off as a freshman. So when I went back, I talked to every one of the professors, and I was cool with them. And I said, you know, but this counselor was all over to go see him. Went and see the guy, and what a knucklehead. I had no... So I never went back to see a counselor ever. And I don't think I ever... The only professor I ever saw was my graduate economics guy, a terrific guy named Danilo. He did was teaching graduate courses, and I wanted to take a graduate course. And I went and I said, you know, you're teaching money and banking, but it's a two-semester course, and I missed the first semester. He goes, nah, the first semester was all in banking. Second one's on money. You'll be fine. And the only 2 times I ever talked to people. Now everybody has to see these people all the time. Why?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I guess as an institution, you want to provide really good customer service. And I don't mind doing it because I really get to know students. And at Westminster, you know, at a private liberal arts college, not an Ivy League, you have to do a lot of management of the customer, right? You have to do an outstanding job to keep them paying the tuition, honestly. Because other institutions are doing it. So at Alliance University, where I was the chair of the business department, I was the advisor of 120-plus students. And I also had to hire the adjuncts to make sure that their classes were covered. So what I did is I kind of overlapped the two. I'd plan out their schedule, every student's schedule for, you know, the time remaining, and then I could... figure out how to put instructors in the classrooms, right? Because we didn't have very... In New York City, it's really strange. And I think this is a characteristic of most large cities on the East Coast, where it's really expensive to do business. You have very few full-time faculty in the smaller schools, the less prestigious schools. And it seems like most of the work is done by adjuncts. Because, you know, at Westminster, we had maybe one or two adjuncts and everybody else was full-time. But at Alliance and a lot of schools in New York City, for example, it seems like most of the classes are taught by adjuncts. So as a person who needed to make sure that there was a professor to teach classes to ensure the students got through, I actually didn't mind doing it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I got to really know the students, and I think they liked the effort I put into it. So to me, it's just customer service.
They still have... adjunct professors like demonstrate at places like they were for a while. For those that I don't know how long people have been listening to Stacks and Jacks, but one of our, well, obviously a very good friend and a person I graduated with, the one person from our group that is no longer with us, Bob Golden, terrific guy. Bob was a CPA and a lawyer, tax attorney, and he did a lot of the stuff Hal, where, you know, like the double Dutch sandwich and all that stuff. Well, Bob was one of the guys who kind of put that stuff together for people that didn't want to pay taxes. He didn't really want to talk about that much, but he would. One day I said to him, I go, Bob, how the hell do you keep a straight face when you blow this crap by the IRS? And he goes, Tom, when you're making $700 an hour, you learn how to keep a straight face. Okay then. But anyway, but Bob,
what year was he making $700 a year?
This was a long time ago, but this is really highly specialized stuff. This is when somebody, you know, it's
eighties.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably nineties when everybody was taking their stuff overseas.
It's probably $300-$400, or it's what. But over $1,000 now.
This is where a firm would say, "Hey, look, we don't really want to pay any taxes." We're like Starbucks had all the stores in London, but all the profit was in Amsterdam, even though they had like one store there.
They use transfer pricing. Yeah,
all that. I mean, these are the guys that set all that stuff up. And
they use transfer pricing.
Well, they used every little trick they could, basically.
Well, the governments have these laws set up that essentially allow it to happen legally. And my buddy Dan, who I graduated with at Washington State years ago, he actually wrote a chapter in the transfer pricing economics textbook. And what they do is they just put like a piece of paper, intellectual property or rules of incorporation in a box, a lock box in some office building, like for example in Zug, Switzerland, or the Cayman Islands. And then what they do is they charge the franchisees rents for the use of the IP, right?
Yeah. Like
Burger King can offshore all of its revenues to tax-free havens by renting the use of the word Whopper or the BK or the thing, right?
Well, they rent it. That's a trademark or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Matter of fact,
It's all legal.
Well, I used to have this argument with Dr. J. It's not legal. It's not illegal. There's a difference.
Yeah. It's if you're an enemy of the state, if the state doesn't like you, it's illegal. But if the state likes you, it's legal.
Well, I mean, Dan and I, when he was on the show, we used to fight about this all the time. Matter of fact, it's one of our most highly listened to shows on the scores. We were absolutely at each other's throats about this. And he would talk about it's the tax. You got to simplify the tax code.
Yeah.
And I would say, Jan, you know, I love you like a brother, buddy, but you're absolutely wrong. The reason why the tax code is like it is because if it was simple, people find a way around it. So you have to make it more complicated.
But then only the deep-pocketed corporations can find their ways around it, right? Well, they're the ones that find loopholes.
Well, suppose you do something simple. Okay, everybody.
Actually, what the tax code is at a corporate level, it's a barrier to entry, and it benefits the big corporations.
Well, I mean, for instance, one of the first groups that did this, one of the first drug companies, I believe, and this is a long time ago. I think it was an outfit called Forest Labs, which probably has been bought up 15 times by now. They went to, I believe, Bermuda. And what they... Now, say Stocks and Jacks. I'll just give this example out to people. I've given it before, but not for like a long time. Like suppose, for instance, Stocks and Jacks all of a sudden had a sugar daddy, and they were giving us $1 million a year, you know, for like to do public service commercials. They just love the show that much. So we got this income, right? So I'm sitting there going, wait, this tax here is X, and the tax at that time, I think they went to Bermuda, Forest Labs. Suppose I were to say, you know, Ricky doesn't like it here all that much. I'm going to send him over to Bermuda, say, or Bahamas, or wherever he wants to go, and we're going to open up a tiny little office, and we're going to have Ricky call in once a week with the schedule of people, like you and Carl and everybody, which, by the way, we already have, so we really don't need him to do that. But and we're going to take Stocks and Jacks, which is a trademark, by the way, if anybody didn't know, and we're going to put the trademark over there, so we're going to send $15,000-$20,000 a month to Bermuda for both the scheduling and for use of our own trademark that, of course, is given to us by the U.S. government, right? Which is, so to bring it offshore and pay for it is a little bit... Well, that's what Forest Labs did with all their patents. They brought the U.S. patents overseas and then paid from here to the tax haven. So the income was over there and stuff that was given to them by the U.S. government. Which is, I tell you what, it may be not illegal, but it sure as hell doesn't pass a smell test, at least to me.
Well, you know, to me it just needs, it's indication that needs to be cleaned up, because that's what FTX was doing, right? Sam Bankman-Fried was doing that.
Yeah.
He had a CEO who was really doing nothing in the Bahamas, right? Yeah. Just doing nothing. He had a big, and then they actually moved their operations to Bahamas, and I think that's when they got really into trouble, when they were at the Bahamas. But there was a 60 Minutes episode where Leslie Stahl was talking to this congressperson from Texas, and in the interview he said, "Yeah, this is the hubris of these Congress people. I have a company who does that. They put a piece of paper in this box in Switzerland, and the only thing in the room is like this conference table that nobody ever sits at, and they call that their corporate headquarters." And he said, "Well, I'm gonna create this law that says your corporate headquarters have to be where you're incorporated at is where your corporate headquarters are to be located." Well, within that segment, they reported that company, just on the mention of this, they moved their corporate headquarters from Houston to Switzerland, just because he was talking about it. They moved their headquarters, so the headquarters got up and moved to Switzerland. So his words actually caused the board, or the people who run the company, to actually move their location, not just have the paperwork there, but they actually moved it there.
Well,
now I'd rather have them paying taxes in Texas than paying taxes in Switzerland, because I don't want to pay all the taxes.
Well, it comes down to you let people slide between the lines, and somewhere somebody has to say, "Hey, bleeps, 90% of your coffee sales are in London, not in Amsterdam."
Yeah.
Guess what? 90% of the income is in London. I don't care how you slice it. There needs to be a smell test.
Well, this whole thing is why I find the Republicans, when they talk about, "Hey, we're going to have a one-time tax holiday, and we're going to bring all these profits back to the United States tax-free or at some reduced rate." You know, does that money really get invested in the company? I don't think so.
Well,
right?
I think after Trump did that, and again, if Bob was alive, he could tell me one way or the other, but I think you're actually better off overseas now than before the thing was passed.
Yeah, it was a one-time thing. I don't think it leads to any long-term expansion of our aggregate supply. I don't think it does anything.
Trump is no more going to go after that class of people than the man in the moon.
Yeah.
And neither
I don't think the Democrats are either, because Democrats are the party of the elite. They're the new party of the tech oligarch.
Well, regardless of how you slice it, but here's how it gets so insidious. I mean, most people, and I say most people, the numbers, by the way, I include myself in the most people, the numbers are so astronomical. If you are some company that, say the tax rate here, it's down to 21%, but say for a while it was 30, and over there you're paying 5, or you're weaseling away to pay 5. Well, now, if you're making even like $1 billion a year, it's $250 million every year. Now what happens if your drug companies, and Hal all of a sudden has some people that work for him that really are really good, and they've got some new drug that looks like it's going to, you know, really help some people. Now, and Hal doesn't, of course, they also have it so that there's no way you get a drug through the FDA unless you're one of the big companies, right?
Yeah.
So you essentially have to sell out.
If you have a cushy seat for a former regulator.
So if you got a guy like Ricky, who actually has a drug company, a big one here in the U.S. if there are any left, and he says, "Okay, now we all sniff out that Hal has this new drug. Is there any way on earth that Ricky's company can outbid one of the people that are overseas making 25% more a year than he is because they're not paying taxes? There's no way they can outbid him." Right? How can they? They got all this money. Plus, they allow people, well, let alone favor college rules, is if you have this money overseas that if you brought it here, you'd have to pay taxes on. Our government, which, you know, half of them should be shot or whatever, or not shot, but they, I mean, I think you can actually, as long as you buy U.S. T-bills or U.S. securities, you can bring it back.
Yeah.
Which is, how does anybody even think?
The government loves that, man, because they find a source for the financing of the deficits they're running, right?
Well, but it's you know, we we do these kinds of things.
Remember,
we wonder
the government's a player. The government's not just a referee. The government's a player.
Yeah, that's a problem. I mean, it's a big problem, and it's about to come.
The Fed would be the Chicago Bears if the Chicago Bears also hired the federal government would be the Chicago Bears if the Bears also hired all the officials.
Sort of like in college ball, where the games are all rigged.
I'll tell you, Krzyzewski, that dude. If you upset him, you'd never work his game again. That dude had some serious power.
Well, there was a time when the home team actually hired the refs.
Yeah, or paid them.
Now that doesn't happen. But what Kevin has found, or he thinks he's found, and he's pretty observant. If ever you want to check out officiating, you can't watch your team, right? I mean, there's no way I can. Well, I can't because all my buddies be texting me every 30 seconds. I can't watch a Notre Dame game and bitch about the officials, right? Because I'm a partisan fan. Not as much as the rest of my guys, but I'm partisan. You know, same way with the Bears. As much as I can't stand the McCaskies, I guess I'd rather see the Bears win than somebody else because it means the people, the bars I know do better and stuff. It's okay. But if you ever want to watch a game that you have no skin in the game, just watch it, and you'll see stuff like Kevin claims it used to be that if you were a Notre Dame playing a ACC team and it was all ACC refs. Well, people in the ACC are pissed off because Notre Dame's an independent and they should be in a conference. So I think they would get – there'd be refs that would give you crummy calls, right? But now Kevin says it's all switched around, that the crookedness, for lack of a better term, is in we want that playoff spot. So we're not going to let Penn State get upset by Nebraska or something.
Oh, there's a good example. Cal. Was it Cal playing Miami?
Well, I was going to say Miami's probably been the biggest – Yeah, Miami's probably been the biggest beneficiary this year of calls.
Oh, yeah, because the ACC needs an undefeated team so they can get that conference playoff money, right? Cal should have won that game that they played against Miami a few weeks ago. There was this targeting call, and it was clear. The guy, the defender from Miami, clearly lowered his head into the quarterback who was scrambling, nailed him right in the hat, head-to-head, and nothing, right? Nothing. Why? Because Cal should have won that game. And then now Miami would have a defeat, and they would have the ACC would have a very difficult time getting somebody in that college football playoff.
Well, wasn't the next play something that was a two-point conversion? And weren't there like three offensive linemen about 5 yards deep in the end zone or something?
they get
called? It was so totally – even the people who are the announcers – usually are so partisan, you know, will say anything that the league wants them to say.
Well, they'll talk about how kind of like they won't. I think they observe the bad call.
Yeah,
and they'll just and ESPN does the same thing. ESPN will never hold. I mean, rarely do they hold officials accountable. They'll just talk about how the team got beat up. They won't talk about the events that led to the result, right? And you know, I just find ESPN horrible. I think they're an entertainment. They're an entertainment business. They're not sports.
Well, sure they are.
And I don't buy that they're a sports network at all. They're purely entertainment, and they have their corporate partners. When you watch Home Depot, the Home Depot pregame show, game day on Saturday mornings, they have this big contract with the SEC. All they do is talk about how great the SEC teams are. That's all they do. They might have one Big Ten or two Big Ten games in there. They won't talk about anybody on the West Coast. I mean, it's so bad.
Well, did you see the Monday night game where the guy got hurt, and thankfully he's all right, the offensive lineman that they thought he might have some neck problem, paralysis?
Yeah.
But he's okay, thank God. But
that's good, yeah, thank
but,
you.
But all the announcers did was rant and rave about how incredibly good the medical staff was and how they got him to this hospital, and it's a level 1 trauma center. He's got the world... The fact is, football is an incredibly violent sport.
Yeah,
a lot of people are maimed for the rest of their life playing the damn game. And, you know, I'm not saying they should stop. Whatever. I'm just the fact that they're going to have the world's best care afterward. Well, I guess it's better than not having it. But
yeah.
I mean, how long can you rant about that? You would hope that they at least get into a decent place.
You got a player that's worth millions and millions of dollars.
This guy's a backup lineman, so he probably wasn't. But still.
Oh. Okay.
You get,
still, I mean, still the left tackle Isn't the left tackle like the second highest paid player on these NFL? Well, maybe not now.
This guy, here's what happened. What's his name? Rodgers. Wings the ball at this guy. It was a great pass. I don't know if the guy tipped it a little bit or not. Hits the guy right in the chest, which makes me think the guy might have tipped it a little bit. Bounces up in the air, and a defender grabs it. So it's intercepted, right?
Yeah.
So the guy starts racing downfield, and this big old lineman, really big young lineman, starts running after the thing to make the tackle, and somebody clocks him. It was kind of in front of him. It was a solid block, and down the guy goes. But when he hit the ground, he had like the whiplash thing with his helmet.
Oh man! Oh.
So he just kind of was there, and evidently he must have.
Imagine how that would feel on those old AstroTurf fields. Oh
well,
man.
It was on the sideline, so it probably was on some kind of an AstroTurf thing. But so he's laying there, and they put the board on him and that kind of thing, and they were worried that he had something wrong with his neck. But all the tests, he must have just got a real nasty like stinger that jarred him, you know, for a while, and where he couldn't feel stuff. But when he was leaving the field, he was starting to move stuff. So. But anyway, they did a terrific job with the guy. But the guy ran it on and on about, you wouldn't believe how the NFL cares about this, and they have all this great trauma stuff and things ready. And I'm going, okay then.
Well, they're PR for the NFL. They're their corporate partner, right?
Yeah. Well, you mean Howard Cosell does not get a job today. I mean, there's
no... Yeah, no, I don't think so. Not at all, no.
But you can't... What was it? I never played the game or something. Why he never could get anything. He was such a character. I still... Monday Night Football was so much fun with those guys. Remember?
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I love the best shot. I'm sure it's nowhere on YouTube or whatever.
Well, highlights back then were awesome because highlights were so scarce.
Yeah.
Because there were no 24-hour sports networks, you know, showing you highlights. So halftime highlights was the thing that you waited for, right? When I was a little kid, when I was like 8, 9, 10 years old, the halftime highlight show was the thing to watch for me.
And the Bear fans were always pissed off because the Bears suck so bad that they were never in the highlights, and they blamed Cosell. And all Cosell did was narrate him. He didn't put them together.
Well, Earl Campbell was never – very rarely did we see a Houston Oilers game out in Idaho, and I was the biggest Oilers fan, just the biggest. I would literally cry if they lost. I remember seeing those highlights of Earl Campbell running over Jack Lambert, just crushing him, right, on a one-on-one tackle.
He was a lot bigger than Jack Lambert.
Oh yeah, that dude was so big and powerful. Can you imagine him in today's game with the workout regimes they have now, the strength and conditioning on the field turf? He would just be a monster today.
I think I saw him in one of the sporting goods shows. He wasn't that tall.
No, he wasn't. But man, that
huge
dude
legs,
was a
huge
square
legs,
rectangle. Yeah,
yeah, he was kind of built like a refrigerator. It's funny when you see these people.
And he probably never had a workout in his life. You know, he just naturally gifted that way.
Well, some of these guys, they all had stuff. I mean, Peyton used to run up a hill all the time, and Dick Butkus used to push a car up and down the street. It's by himself.
He probably ate the car after he did.
Yeah, it's funny, you see these people after their career, and the linemen always get skinnier, and the backs, who are big men to start with, all of a sudden they gain weight. I mean,
the linemen, they tend to shrink up, yeah.
Well, I mean, I saw Alan Page was, he couldn't have been more than 215, 220. He was a marathon.
Well, I think what happens is, in order to be that big, you have to have like a 6,000 to 8,000 calorie diet per day. And when you're done playing football, maybe you just go to a normal diet. And then what you see after the NFL is what they would have been if it wasn't for football, right?
Well, I saw Franco Harris. The guy looked like a refrigerator. I mean, he was as tall as me. His huge broad shoulders just up and down. He was just a huge man. But even the basketball players, you see,
George from Ohio State. Yeah. I saw him in New Orleans. NFL Today was in. It was NFL Today. They were in New Orleans, and he walked through the hotel, and I was like, "That is a big freaking dude, man! Yeah. I would not want to wrangle that guy. Man, that guy was big."
Well, you see people in college basketball, guys that I watched when I was in school. You see somebody like Lawson Carroll. He was a senior when I was a freshman, but you could just see he was something different about the guy. When all the other guards were 175 pounds, he was 192 pounds or something. You think that 17 pounds doesn't make a difference? It makes a huge difference in strength.
Oh, it does, especially in the low block.
And all of a sudden, now you see him today. I mean, his shoulders are as wide as the room.
Wow.
I mean, and Adrian Dantley was—he got down to 215. He was just a big guy. I mean, when he was 215, 220, he was shredded. And now he must wear like a 56 coat, and he doesn't look fat.
Yeah,
I mean,
Adrian Dantley. If you want to get good in the low block, you watch film of him.
Oh yeah,
that guy had the best footwork.
Yeah, huge hands. He was a star tight end. He could have been in the NFL easy.
He was only 6'4", 6'5", right?
Yeah, he may be a little bit taller than me, but boy, he was strong.
He had footwork.
He had strong.
That ball entered to the post with him down there. It was basically a bank drop.
And if the ball went up in the air, he knew right where it was going to go. He had amazing instincts. SP Futures down 23, NASDAQ Futures down 95. We come back. Let's talk about, are these interest rates going to keep going like this? Are they a trade, or is it too late to get on board, or what are we doing? Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310. Or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P futures are down 25. NASDAQ futures down 107. We're coming back some. I know we're kind of backing up a little bit. Dow futures down 126, which is somewhat interesting. It's 3M and earnings up 7. What do we have down? We've got Goldman Sachs down 230. Not anything really crazily down here in the Dow. Like I say, we got one up. We got Home Depot down $5. That might do some of it. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 16. Call that flat. FTSE down 49.6%. CAC around down 25.3%. So down a little bit. The German software giant SAP hits all-time high. We're an all-time high yet again. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 542, 1.4%, 38,411. So not really going towards 40,000 like we sort of thought they were going to. Hang Seng down 20. Talk about up 20. That's a breather day for those guys. 20,498. Shanghai up 17.5%, 32,85. So actually very quiet over in the Chinese markets, not so much in the Nikkei. Yesterday, Dow was down 344, S&P down 10. NASDAQ up 50. We were down and we came back. Dow just have one or two stocks moving around. It causes that to move around. Bonds up 1 basis point, 4.19. The Bund up 3 basis points, 2.31. I think the 10-year was over 4.2 at one point, but it has come back down here. Japan up 1 basis point, 0.97. Oil up 57 cents, 71.13. Bend up 52 cents, 74.81. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.28. RBOB up 2 cents, 2.03. Gold continues to move up a little bit, up 11, 40, 27.50. It's the first time it's ever been through 27.50, I think. Silver up 55 cents. This is the one that's really moving, 34.63. We've got a bunch of people in silver, and they were very happy. Copper up 3 cents, 4.39. I just wonder if this is what happens when you manage money for people. I'm sitting there going, okay, is this it? I mean, look how it's moving. Or is what's happening with the money supply and everything? Has everybody figured out the metals are the place to be, and it's just starting? I don't think it's just starting, but we might try and take a little off today. I don't know. Maybe we'll see. Euro versus the dollar, 108.16. This was over 110 for a while, so the dollar has been stronger. British pound, 129. It's been over 130 for a long time. Again, dollar is just a little off its highs. Crypto, down 568 into Bitcoin, 67,054. A lot of stuff there, Ricky. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at about 54 degrees right now with 74 as a high temperature. Partly sunny, breezy, and warm, but a shower cannot be ruled out. So now we'll be partly cloudy with a low of 57 degrees. Sun of Phoenix, Arizona, 62 degrees right now with a high of 95. Mostly sunny and very warm. So now we'll be clear and with a low of 64 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe is 42 minutes. We're looking at 60 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lynn Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 43 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 27 minutes. Lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 47 minutes. Sports. This is a good time of the year to be talking about sports, Hunter, so we got everything going on right now. In the NFL yesterday, the Cardinals beat the Chargers 17-15. And week 8 is starting this week. Thursday, October 24th, we got the Vikings playing the Rams at 7:15 in Inglewood, California. Sunday, October 27th, we got the Cardinals playing the Dolphins at 12 p.m. in Miami, and the Bears playing the Commanders at 3:25 p.m. in Landover. On the NBA, today we got the Knicks playing the Celtics at 6:30 p.m. in Boston, and the Timberwolves playing the Lakers at 9 p.m. in L.A. Tomorrow, we have the Bulls facing the Pelicans at 7 p.m. in New Orleans, too. MLB, Friday, October 25, we got the Yankees playing the Dodgers at 7:08 p.m. in L.A., and lastly, for the NHL, the Maple Leafs beat the Lightning yesterday 5-2. And today we got the Blackhawks playing the Canucks at 7:15 in Chicago. Back over to you, Chief.
A lot of stuff, and I don't think I can get half of it. They got the new station. I don't think my cable carries it yet. So as far as I'm concerned, they're not on, you know. Just saying. So, hell, we have interest rate stuff going on here. We've got everybody's – every candidate's promising everybody everything like they do 2 weeks before the election. His interest rates, I got the 10-year is 4.19 here. I don't know. Is nobody's been ignored until it gets to 5, or what's going on here? It concerns me that we have so much of our long-term investment is from overseas, not as much as it used to be, but some. What happens if there's a... You know, China has managed to put their stock market back together by pouring money into the system. I don't think that creates wealth necessarily, although some people seem to think it does. Are we going to see a 10 or 30 year pop, like all of a sudden one auction is going to be 6.5 and everybody's going to go, oops? I mean, or we just a little bit of a run up here?
Well, if you look at M2 of China, Japan, Europe, and the United States, it looks like we're probably inflating. I think we were inflating less than other central banks, but I think today, you look at the recent M2 growth rates, it looks like we're inflating more than we were previous to the pandemic, and I think we're inflating probably faster than other nations. So I you know, why is that? Well, the Fed, it's got to cover all these, help paper over all this debt interest that we have to pay. They have to help paper over the deficits that the Republicans and Democrats are running currently. So I don't think it's going to get better. I think interest rates are going to continue to go up. I think the Fed is inflating. I think the Fed has always been inflating. They just had interest rates at where maybe the market would have them at. I think the Fed had to raise interest rates because the market was moving higher. So
the two-edged phenomenon that they did during the COVID, which if you're gonna trade on the invest, trade, whatever you want to call it, on the security side, the interest rate products, which mostly are on the commodity side, which, by the way, if you open up an account at PTI Pro Direct, you can trade both. But most people just have a security account and don't have a futures account. So if you're gonna trade the longer term stuff, there's something called the TLT, which is essentially 20-year plus bonds. So it's sort of a ETF surrogate for the long bonds, right between the 10 and the 30. Well, that thing is now 92.43. It topped out at 175 when the rates were like, 1.5 and stuff. Well, the thing that the Fed did, they not only poured so much money into the system, which anybody who's been trading for a while or knows much about economics, you go, wait a minute. That's going to cause inflation, and if it causes inflation, it means that people are going to demand higher interest rates further out because your money you get back isn't going to be worth as much as the money you gave to the person that you lent it to. And all of a sudden, that's not happening. And even though it looked like the TLT could only go down, every time, not every time, but most of the time when you shorted it, the Fed had run out and buy it. And they essentially bought up the securities that should be going down, and them going down, the interest rates goes up. So they did the two-step on everybody. And I don't think they've ever done that before. And now, Carl, they're actually letting the balance sheet run off. So they're not doing that piece of it. So if they keep putting money in on the front end, and like you say, if you take the last month's increase from, the last month they tell us about, from July to August, and multiply it by 12, it's almost 7% a year, which is clearly inflationary, like you just said. And actually, the money supply has been going up every month since February, which is not the way you fight inflation, all right?
No,
so,
no, it's not.
But so well, now what's happening is it going to continue to creep up? And if all of a sudden, like, China doesn't show up for, you know, whatever, $50 billion in the next month's auction, which I think they probably still will, but if they start cutting back, in order to borrow the money, it's supply and demand, like everything else. You got to offer a higher price, meaning more interest, to get people to buy your crap. Crap being bonds, right? I mean, so whatever it is, I mean, you've got to incentivize people to do it. And one guy was talking about how, I don't know, was it in Britain or someplace a couple of years ago where the 30-year went from 1 month it was like 4 and the next month it was like 5.5, just all of a sudden. And he's convinced that's going to happen here, not whether he's right or not. God knows it. What is it, a broken clock's right twice a day? But, you know, are we? Would I take Hal's dad's money and put it in a 10-year treasury at 4.1% if I thought the inflation rate was going to be 3, 3.5, 4 at a minimum? No way on earth would I do that. Why would I? It's insanity. That means I'm going to give, you know, Hal's dad money back to him worth a lot less than he gave it to me, and the 4% doesn't cover it. So
that could mean that the inflation is measured correctly.
Well, if you want to believe the BS, well, then that's another story. But these guys are playing. They're kind of at the end of a pretty interesting game they've been playing for 6 or 7 years, and you know, Carl's convinced there's going to be a real quick comeuppance one of these days. I don't know. I mean, I don't think they can just pour more money in. I don't know if the population is going to buy this crap for another 5 years. Then again, what the population can do? What power does the bottom 90% of the population have? None, really.
Can I ask you a question, Tom, about investors in general? The ones that you see on TV, the ones that are at these investment houses, are they generally impressed by the Fed? Do they basically buy the narrative that the Fed is this great market institution that we need? Do they buy that, or are they skeptical?
When you say they, if you're a huge investment firm, money management firm, that doesn't do anything like I do, to where, you know, if somebody's past retirement age, we will protect something because it's all the money they have. They don't do any of that. They just put it in with big cap Bob, mid cap Mike, and put it in the market. And their story is that the market's going to go up every year, no matter what. No matter what you ask them, every January, every one of them is going to say, "Wow, since 19-something-something, the market's been up on average 7.5-8% a year." And by the way, give us your money, and we'll make sure that happens. Well, you don't need them to do that, type of thing. But they are absolutely convinced that the Fed's job now is to maintain the wealth bubble. And by the way, that's what the Fed's doing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're maintaining a wealth bubble.
Is driving the wedge between the people at the very, very top and the people, everybody else, right?
Well, but you also have this time around, unlike 1929 or in the 1920s, you have an appreciable part of the population, I don't know what percentage I'd put on it, that has a fairly active 401k IRA that they are participating in this, and you have an awful lot of people, and a lot of them are my clients, not a lot of them nationwide, but a lot of them that worked their whole life, them and a wife, you know, the regular Americans, I'll use the term, and they earned money, the money they earned, paid for the house, paid for the car, did that stuff. Not very much was saved of that money, but the money that was put in the 401ks or the IRAs really hasn't been touched in 25, 30 years, and basically the market's been up the whole way, right? Yeah. And so you have people that have this $1.5-2 million wealth bubble that they, you know, they earned the money or they wouldn't have put it in the first place. So that's not what I'm saying, but the dramatic increase of that is something that, I mean, there's people that I literally, you know, and I just, for me, the weird part of it when I obviously talking to people as much as I have my whole life, I understand kind of where they're coming from, but I don't. One thing I'll never understand, and I was in this discussion with a guy gave a ride home the other night, that if you've been a trader, you look at your account every day, okay? And if IBM, if you got 1,000 shares of IBM on your sheets, I use that term, and it's going to be, that 1,000 shares is going to be worth $232,000, right? Because IBM's trading 232. Now the next day, if it's trading 215, it's going to be worth 215. So in the day, I've lost $7,000. Now, for a trader, that was a bad day because you mark yourself to market every day. I'm not saying retail people should necessarily do that, but when you drop back into this mentality, I bought IBM 30 years ago at 60. So what? I'm still up 115. I'm just not up 122. My mentality is, what do you mean, so what? you're down $7,000 in a day. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm still up whatever. And if it goes back to 170, I'm still okay. And I go, you know, it's almost like if you're playing blackjack and you're up $500, that if I give them 250 back, it's okay because it was theirs to begin with. No, it's not. It's yours. I mean, I'm not saying that the minute every stock goes up a buck, you want to get rid of it. I mean, that's not what I'm saying. But when you have something that you think is, if I say, well, gee, Hal's grandpa, would you buy 1,000 shares of IBM today at 222 or 232? And you go, hell no. And I said, well, do you want to sell it? Well, no. Well, should we protect it? Should we lock in some of this? Should we pay a few bucks to buy, a put out 6 months or a year just in case the election, whichever way is the right way, doesn't land the right way, or all of a sudden there's a big problem with interest rates, you know, can we lock in something in here? The answer might be yes. You don't have to say, I'll sell it. Or maybe, where would you sell it? Well, boy, if the thing traded, 245, I'd sure get rid of it. Well, do you want to sell the 245 calls? That way, if it goes 245, it's gone. Yeah, maybe. I'm saying every person is an individual. The bigger people, Merrill Lynch does not want 40,000 people making these kinds of decisions. They want you to shove everything into big cap, you know, big cap Bob, mid cap Mike, or whether the person needs some kind of fixed income. You put those things in those things. They don't hedge them. They don't do anything like that. It's all just, if the market goes up, we do good. If the market goes down, the government bleeped up. But I mean, the individual kind of care that you get with somebody like me, but you know what? There's not many people like me around anymore. I mean, there's not many people traded on the trading floor that are very comfortable doing risk management for people individually. Yeah. I mean, I'm capable of doing it. My brother is, a couple other people here, but I would never go to somebody at Merrill Lynch and say, design me an option portfolio to minimize my risk. I wouldn't do that in a nanosecond. Mm-hmm. Even though Merrill Lynch does like a real lot of good stuff. I mean, it's not like they do everything horribly. But I mean, that if you want, but the word I don't quite get. These conversations are so tough to have, Hal. What if somebody bought, 2,000 shares of NVIDIA 8 years ago, and it's up here? Well, do you think it's going higher? Yeah, it's going higher. Okay, well that's fine. You want to lock some in? Well, no. But now here's the tough part. What if the 8 years ago was when you were 61, and you still had a full salary coming in and everything else, and now you're retired? Now you don't have anything coming in. So NVIDIA's and a few other stocks are all you got. Now all of a sudden it's not like, well that's okay, if NVIDIA goes down I'm making $500,000 a year as a doctor, so what? I mean, it's never so what, but you know what I'm saying. Every case is so individual, you almost can't generalize, which everybody else does. Everybody else just generalizes. But I mean, there's a big difference between somebody having a concentration issue, meaning a lot of his stock, a lot of his investments in one stock, who's retired versus who isn't. There's a massive difference, right? You think these other people give a crap?
Well, you know, when I look at housing and I look at the way I kind of see corporate stock working, maybe this is an old school view, but you buy a house to live in it, and I think the Fed has manipulated interest rates for so long that people have been tricked into thinking that that home is like some investment property, and so they buy and sell, they buy and sell, instead of just holding for the long run and then having that house paid off when they retire. Same thing with stocks. I mean, I think about that movie with Brendan Fraser and one of my favorite all-time actors. What's his name? Christopher Walken.
Well, there's a character. Back to the Future. There's a character.
Yeah. Back to, what was it called? But
was he the guy? He was there when Natalie Wood got killed, right?
I don't know, but there's this movie where Brendan Fraser is Christopher Walken's son, and I think Sissy Spacek plays the mom, and they've been stuck in this bunker for like 30 years, and something happens, and so they emerge out of the bunker, and Brendan Fraser walks around with like these AT&T stocks from 1950 something, right? And he's worth like millions and millions of dollars. I forget the number. But that's the view I have. Blast from the Past. That's what the name of the movie was, Blast from the Past. And Christopher Walken was so good in it. He's good in everything. But that's the kind of view I have of what corporate stock should be. You buy into this blue chip company, you hold it, you're invested in it, you're an investor, you're an owner of the company, and that company returns you a portion of the profits. That's kind of how I see it.
Well,
that
is my view too, but that's so... if that's the case,
and I think the Fed has ruined that. I think the Fed has just totally ruined these institutions.
Well, the corporate boards, to me, has been the in my opinion, one of the single biggest, if not the single biggest, Achilles heel in the entire situation now is the way corporate boards are set up. Essentially, the chairman runs the board, and not the other way around.
Yeah.
And when you look at, in my opinion, one of the most dysfunctional companies there is, United Airlines. I mean, I have to believe that if you and I were sitting on that board and they want to spend $1.5 billion on buying stock back, you and I might say, I'll tell you what, why don't we put $300 million in a dividend, and with the other $1.2 billion, why don't we actually buy three planes instead of lease them?
Yeah.
What are they doing buying... I mean, right now, When you get a company, the idea when you invest, that's the whole reason for the stock market, is a secondary market, so people feel comfortable having their investment in the primary market when a stock is growing, that you can get out of it if you want. It's an incredible invention, and it's beautiful. That's why I love it. But
yeah,
when you sit there, I mean, if you buy Snar Inc. and all of a sudden it's growing, okay. And you say, I just love Hal Snar and Snar Inc. And they grow every year, and all of a sudden they use all the money, the profits, to grow, which you should when you're growing. And all of a sudden they reach the point where they're kind of a mature company. They pay a little bit of a dividend, then they pay a little more. And finally, every year you can count on Snar Inc. making $10 a share, using four or five or six for the good growth they still see, and send you a check for the rest.
Yeah.
That now, my opinion, I don't see either one of these people espousing my opinion. We should raise corporate tax rates, and we should make dividends deductible so people only pay once. So raise the corporate tax rate to 30%, but if you pay it out in a dividend, you don't pay any of it. You deduct it. And then the person on the other end...
That would definitely incentivize the kind of the model that I think stocks should be.
Why do you think Warren Buffett and all these people hang on to all this money? It's because their excuse is they get taxed twice if they pay out a dividend.
Yeah.
But anyway, what I'm saying, that should be, and all of a sudden, you should be a lifetime owner if you want to be of Snar Inc.
Yeah.
And a regular company, and you should get your returns. It shouldn't just be every single Tesla. How much money have they given that guy? I mean, let's say he's a genius. what percentage of their profits have gone to him personally? They'll never pay a dividend. Why would you ever be involved in that stock?
I don't see a reason for companies to want to give a dividend, right? You've already paid taxes, and people want to avoid paying taxes.
But at some point, it's their dough. Yeah. I mean, as a professor, I assume the formula.
Well, people are buying Elon Musk stock, if you will, because they believe it's going to appreciate, and they're going to hold it.
They're
going to hold it until they decide to sell it,
or hold it until one day it's no good. You never got a dime.
Yeah, and that can very well happen. I mean, you see all these companies, like for example, you look at AOL. AOL was the biggest company on the block in the 1990s, and it purchased Time Warner. But then AOL value dropped like a rock after, 2000, 1999, somewhere in there. It dropped like a rock. And then Time Warner became had more of the control of that company. Now AOL is like a old website, right?
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, it's funny, Professor. If I was going to grade you for the last 30 seconds, I'd have to give you an A. Because you know what you just did? You tied the two together.
Yeah.
I mean, on the investment side. So you can grade me on all the other stuff because you know way more about most things than me. But on this side, I can grade you. You just tied the two together. If you bought AOL, and I'm assuming they didn't pay a dividend, maybe they did, but if they don't, if they're not going to give you a share of the profits, it's up to you to take your own share.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So if the stock is going to go from 50 to 100 to 150 and they're never going to give you a slice, you have to cut back on your ownership, on yourself, because that's how you're going to get paid. And if you don't do it, you'll never get paid.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, if it's back down to where you bought it 15 years from now, you got nothing. Not only that, you gave up all the money you would have gotten interest by holding it, if the money would have been in the bank. But
yeah, the Fed is not our friend. The Fed is not a market institution. The Fed is a central planning body, not unlike the Politburo of the Soviet Union. I mean, that's what it does. And it's creating this wealth gap between the haves and the have-nots. And the have-nots are most of Americans. And I don't see them. I think this latest move was purely political.
Oh, yeah.
And, I tweeted this out the other day. Man, I don't know if I'd want to be Trump. Or I don't know if I'd want to win this election if I were Trump or Kamala.
Because I wouldn't
Trump keeps
either.
Talking about how he's going to lower interest rates, and I'm thinking, I don't think you're going to be able to do that, dude. You just can't say you're going to have interest rates lower.
I will say this, though. It looks like it's a political kind of move. But, in fact, the federal funds rate was already down to 5. So for them to have the nominal rate at 5.5, this cut didn't do anything to anybody. It was already there. Right.
Well, I think their move up though was just because they had to, because I think interest rates are going to head higher, and I think they're going to continue going higher because of this mountain of debt that we have. The interest on that debt, I think the interest on that debt is over $1 trillion consistently now. So we're going to have this huge interest on the debt that's going to add $1 trillion or more each year to that debt, and that means that interest on the debt is just going to continue to grow, which is going to require the Fed to print money to help paper over.
I think we're doing $1 trillion every. We're doing $1 trillion every like 7 months or something.
Wow! Yeah, it's crazy what's going on here, and not one of the debates touched on any of these topics.
If you asked one of those kinds of questions, you'd never be brought back as a moderator.
Exactly right. You would.
I lobbed it out there, and it was kind of a blasphemy at the time. I'm going to say 8 months ago. You were the one guy who sort of agreed with me, by the way, when I said by the end of next year, maybe even the middle of next year, our 30-year rate's going to be 6.5, 10's going to be 6, and the short-term rate's going to be 4.
Yeah, I just see them moving higher. I don't know how high they're going to go, but I don't think they're going to go back to where they were. I mean, they were low for all that time because the Fed was just pumping the system with money, but they can't do that anymore because they got the federal government's just got too much debt, and the interest payments are need to be papered over with new money. So I don't see interest rates going back to where they were in the 2010s and 2020s. I just don't see it.
Well, I don't either. I don't see them being able to put much more money in. Last thing they want to see is that rate like 10 or 12%, like I remember it being. That would be You know, it's so bizarre how, you know, when you learn stuff, it's almost like the first night you get sick when you drank too much. It's something you'll never forget. Hopefully you'll never drink too much again.
Or the two times that you went to a bar and the only thing they had in behind the bar in terms of cigarettes, and you don't smoke, were unfiltered Camels.
Yeah, or Pall Malls or something.
You smoked the whole pack that night at the bar.
Oh, God.
And then 10 years later when you're in graduate school and you're sick for 5-6 days straight and you haven't touched a cigarette since.
All my family all smoked, and my uncles.
I tried it twice, and fortunately the bar only had unfiltered Camels, and I smoked them all that night, and I was sick for 5 days straight.
I seem to remember my uncles would smoke either the unfiltered ones, I think, were Camels, Pall Malls, and was it Chesterfield?
Oh, my goodness, that's nasty.
Oh, nasty stuff. But
walking to my mom's house in Lewiston, Idaho, I was the only non-smoker, and I'd walk in there when my brothers were there, and my stepbrothers and sisters were there, all visiting my stepfather and my mom. They were all smokers, and the smoke level was down to about 3 feet. I'd have to crawl underneath the smoke cloud. It was that bad.
Well, they used to have my grandmother would cooked dinner every Sunday, and it was always a big poker game afterward. There's six people playing poker, and every one of them smoking. you didn't need to smoke. All you did was inhale. But
it's bad.
But what I'm trying to get to is everybody, things that happen in terms of interest rates, and I'll say something seemingly today really ignorant, like these rates could go up like 1.5% in 6 months. I got to believe anybody under the age of 55, you know, I hope they're not reaching to turn the thing off, and say, this guy cheats some more on me. How could he possibly say something like that? Well, I'll tell you how I could say something like that. Robin, the lady, our late contributor, used to be in kind of the half-assed remodeling business. And we bought this place up on, right by Wrigley Field, maybe 3 blocks west, almost by the lakefront. And it was a deal, it's something you would have liked, Hal. They were redoing this gorgeous courtyard building.
Wow.
And you could either buy it as is, in which case you would do the work yourself, or...
That'd be fun work. I like that kind of work.
Or you could do the remodeling yourself.
Yeah.
And obviously there's two differences in prices. Well, there's one unit that they had already torn the whole inside out of, which is, you know, for somebody like you or me, on a third floor, that's a big deal. You know, hauling all that crap, you know, the stoves and everything down all those steps, that was all done. So somehow Robin talked into them giving us the same price for the one we would have had to do that all ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we buy the thing. But now Robin is assistant treasurer at Pullman. Does all kinds of work with Continental Bank. You know, they're doing everything they possibly can to get more business out of Pullman, blah, blah, blah. So a few times before we had done this, we had gotten a mortgage, in which case you got to pay, you know, some points, you got to pay for the appraisals, all that crap. You know, but at least you had a fixed rate, right?
Yeah.
Well, this time Robin says, well, let's not do that. Let's just get a bridge loan. And I go, okay. So we didn't have to pay any of that crap. We just get the check from Continental Bank, pay for the place, and I start working on it because I just got laid off at Pullman when the passenger division shut down. So I'm working on this thing weekends and most days. And I end up doing it, you know, my budget was exactly correct. I think we did this in November, and it was ready to sell come May or June.
Nice.
Our rate went from, we started out 8.5. I think the last payment was 14 or something in like 9 months, 8 months. So the idea for somebody telling me, oh, they can only go up like quarter point a quarter. No, they can't. They can go as fast as they want to go. Don't tell me it can't. Hell, the day I sold that place, we ended up making on the deal exactly what I thought we were going to make. This is my sweat equity. I got 0 cents per hour. We broke even. I was never so happy to break in anything. And plus, the people that had bought the place, the big, huge kind of, it was an outfit called Bruni. These guys were very well respected. We'll finish the story then, because this is true stuff. These guys were amazingly well respected. They were a competitor to, who were the Greek people? Galitas, that did Lake Point Tower and stuff. Anyway, so they had never bought another property until they finished the one they had. They were very conservative. This one, they sold out half the place the first weekend.
Wow.
And the next week they sold out some more and they go, you know, we're doing so well, we can go ahead and buy another place. They ended up not selling the rest one out for like 2 years or something, and they went out of business.
Wow.
They went out of business because the rates went, this had to be 77, 70, I can look back and find it. The rates went for literally, it was up like 1.5% a month for like 5 months. I mean, so the idea that, oh no, these rates can't go from 4.1 to 6, yeah, they can.
Oh, I think they can. I think the Fed, what we're seeing is the aftermath of the Fed trying to control these markets. And the more government tries to control markets with regulations and price controls, the more the markets want to be set free. And I just don't see this getting better. And I feel bad for the next president because I think they've really inherited a mess.
Well, our last comment, I think that they're supposed to be worried about inflation and employment, right?
Yeah.
And now I think that so many people are dependent on this wealth bubble.
Yeah.
That we can't have a 40% drop. But I mean, some of these stocks, I mean, NVIDIA was up yesterday another $6. That's $150 billion in market cap in one day. I mean, yeah. I mean, all of a sudden the world can't.
That's really the Fed
pumping
money.
Anyway, S&P futures down 31. NASDAQ futures down. Hey, if I ever want to see you one of these days, what state do I even go? Where are you?
We're in North Carolina. We're getting ready to buy a house.
Really? How far away are you for the hurricane destruction? A long way, right?
Oh, we missed it. It was mostly in the mountains, so we missed it all.
Well, don't be going to try on your with your RV. Don't be trying to go on I-40. You'll end up in river.
Well, you can't drive by I-40.
Yeah.
It's knocked out. That and 26.
Ugh. Well, I'll talk to you next week, buddy. Have a good weekend, good week. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks. Nice job, Ricky.
That's all, folks.